Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Q Commentator. And this is our last episode in the current series. My name is Nick Heath and thanks for joining me if this is your first visit or if you're regularly coming back to tune in. The pod has been listened to over 11,000 times in recent months. So although that won't be troubling the top of the podcast charts, I'm frankly absolutely delighted that it's reaching so many of you that are interested in this stuff. The stats also tell me you're all listening to almost the full length of each episode. So yes, good retention rate, that's good. But if you haven't skipped this intro bit like many of us do when we listen to podcasts, well, you know, feel free, now's the time, go on, be off with you, etc. But to the rest of you, I'm proud to be rounding off a third series, and in doing so, receiving 4 to 5 reviews over the last week that have been wonderful to read. Thank you so much to Meltwater Falls, who said great insight and genuinely comforting about the voices of sport becoming much more human and relatable. To Jeff Whiteman, who said he's listened to all 3 series during lockdown, and in particular has enjoyed the chats with Steve Cram and Ian Dark most recently. Love that Ian Dark episode. To Mark O'Meara, who left a fantastic review. He's even called me a witty host, so thanks, Mark. But genuinely, cheers. You can all read these on the show page on iTunes. And finally, to Prop Nurse, who says, Nick Heath does a wonderful job interviewing a variety of sports announcers and getting them to open up on their background, training, and what they do to become so good at their craft. For an American who has admired the professionalism of British sports commentators, I have this podcast to be serious fodder for a football and rugby geek. Well, you've nailed it there, Prop Nurse. That is what this is all about. But hopefully with some cricket, athletics, horse racing, boxing, tennis, swimming and diving in there as well as sports we've covered alongside the football and rugby. I'm fully aware as well there are more sporting angles to cover. Some lovely remarks on social media as well. Please do keep those coming into at Q Commentator or at Nick Heath Sport on Twitter, at Nick Heath Sport on Instagram as well, should you wish to find me there, and those iTunes reviews as well. To this week then, episode 6 of series 3, and our first truly overseas guest. Sure, we've had other guests who've told us about their work overseas, but this week's guest may not be a name that's hugely familiar to many of you, but 4 Commonwealth Games, 3 Olympics, 3 Rugby World Cups, 10 years of All Blacks tours, Netball World Championships, the New Zealand Netball Premiership, and plenty more besides should tell you that this is a man with a vast amount of broadcast and commentating experience. I'm also pleased to say that he's become a friend as well. In this hour-long chat, we'll hear how a job in the warehouse just wasn't quite doing it. We'll take a gentle walk around the subject of unconscious bias regarding race and, of course, the recent Black Lives Matter movement. And we'll find out whether one pair of rainbow laces really is enough. Many of you will know this man, but to those who don't, please allow me to introduce one of the best blokes going. Q commentator, New Zealand's own Nigel Yeldon.
Hey, Heathy, how you doing, my man?
I am very well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Like a lot of people, just battling our way through these strange old times.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah. Well, look, it's an absolute honour to have you here as Q Commentator's first overseas guest, and Well, we are connecting through the joy of the internet. We're here with Zencastr, thanks to them for sourcing it out. We've done it a few times and it's held up okay. This is probably our longest attempt. You're in Hamilton, aren't you?
Yep, yeah, just sitting here in the sun. A very rare sunny day in the Tron recently. It's the heart of winter over our side of the planet, and she's been absolutely throwing down. So once I've had a chat with you, it's back out into the garden to try and just cull all of these weeds that have just sprouted up over the course of the last 5 days.
Yeah, it's been a wet one by the sounds of it. Is it chilly or has it been fairly balmy over there?
No, it's cold. It's cold by New Zealand standards, not by your standards, obviously, but, you know, chilly enough. I mean, it is winter after all, so.
Yeah, it's not a competition anyway.
Precisely.
So listen, born and bred on the west coast of New Zealand's North Island in Whanganui, an assistant manager at the warehouse. I think even without having to explain what the warehouse is to an international audience, they're going to be able to pick it up. Clearly frustrated in that job. You then, it was what, an afternoon, you did what many men do while their wife was out. Well, no, not that, but you came out with a microphone that you'd bought and you did a test commentary to yourself on a Crusaders against Highlanders match. Now, I guess the question for me at this stage is, how old are you when this is happening? What's in your picture, your upbringing, perhaps how sport's been fitting into your life that made you want to give this a go?
Oh, I think we were always a very sporty family, and that came from my mum's family, who was very, very sporty. My mother came from a family of eight. My grandfather was a railway man in New Zealand, so they moved around a heck of a lot up and down the main trunk line in New Zealand. And so sport was a big part of their lives, and it just sort of filtered down. One of my favourite photos I've got of my grandfather is he was part of the first ever rugby team in Otorohanga, and it's a beautiful photo of my father, who was the only light skinned member of the team. The other members of the team were all Māori.
Wow.
And he's standing there, and it's just the most beautiful photo with the management who've got the lovely three-piece suits and the trilby hats and the beautiful hand-carved canes.
Amazing.
And my grandfather standing in the back. They called him Purcell. Purcell is, I don't know if you've got Purcell over there
in
the UK, but yeah, so, you know, it's a whitening agent for cleaning clothes. So they called him Purcell, and it's one of my favourite photos of all time. But yeah, you know, it was just a very sporty family. My grandfather loved his sport. Nana used to, you know, be the one that'd always be on a Saturday afternoon, a big pot of something brewing on the kitchen at the Adams residence in Palmerston North, in case, you know, the Suns brought the rugby team home or that sort of a thing. So, yeah, that's really sort of where sport came in. And then just as a family, my sisters played sport. I obviously loved sport when I was a young fella, and yeah, so it's always been part of what we have done. My father was a football referee. If he'd pushed on, I think his next thing he would have been going for from a refereeing point of view would have been an international badge. He decided that he wasn't going to do that. But yeah, sports always has just been in and around us. We've always sort of enjoyed it as a family.
And I guess for a lot of people, certainly on the UK side of things, we've grown up with a lot of these voices that are synonymous with these big sports, these big sporting occasions. And was it similar for you in that, you know, if you weren't going to be someone taking part in these events or being part of the sport on the field, that you know, it was just important, just as important for you to be part of the occasion on the microphone?
Yeah, precisely. I mean, growing up, we had a thing called Sports Roundup in New Zealand, which became the precursor for what would eventually evolve into the station that I worked for 20-odd years, which was Radio Sport. And so we would listen to the cricket commentaries during the summer in particular. Obviously, they had some of the Olympic stuff and that sort of thing, as well as I was growing up in rugby. And so there were some, you know, some real strong voices from my childhood, you know, the likes of the late, great Graham Moody, John House and John Macbeth, Brian Waddle, Alan McLaughlin, all these amazing commentators. And also horse racing as well. I used to love listening to horse racing and the way they commentated. Keith Hobb was an iconic New Zealand commentator over here. But you know, there's such a rich history of sports commentary on the radio, particularly from that rugby bent. We had people like Bob Irvine and Winston McCarthy. And Winston McCarthy, in particular, was an iconic commentator in New Zealand. He had a phrase when a kick had been made. It was like, "Listen, it's a goal," and it was Winston's thing, and it was just superb. It was just that beautiful. And you know, it's the dramatic pause, and it just hides. Is it over? You're sitting. Is it?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. You know, that sort of thing. So, yeah, there's a real rich history of that in New Zealand, and it's something I guess I'd always thought about, but it didn't come till a wee bit later in life that I actually sort of decided, right, let's bite the bullet, let's give this a crack and see what we can do.
And what did you think of yourself?
I wouldn't have... Heathie, you know how hard this is because commentators are incredibly micro-critical of their own performances.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have done it if I didn't think it didn't sound at least a little bit good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though there was a bit of frustration at the time with what I was doing with my job and I wasn't getting much joy out of that, I think it's like most things. You don't sit there. It's like when Billy Connolly explains it really well. It's like when you're getting ready to go out. At some point, you look in the mirror and you go, right, I'm ready. This looks okay. This is good. Yeah. I'll go out. It's a little bit like that there. I sort of listened to it and thought, okay, it doesn't sound bad. So maybe I could. And it sort of went from there.
Yeah. And when you say you went from there, I mean, a couple of the notes I've got in front of me here say that you wrote a letter to News Talk or Radio Sports, and you sort of wanted to see if there was an opening.
Yeah. I thought, okay, well, I wrote a letter to Bill Francis, and Bill Francis is, you know, the godfather of talk radio in New Zealand. He helped guide and launch so many careers, particularly on News Talk ZB, which is a talk station. The likes of Sir Paul Holmes, Leighton Smith, Larry Williams, Kerry McIver, all these, again, amazing broadcasters that he really, you know, drove and nurtured. Murray Deaker, who was another sports broadcaster. And so I sent a letter to him. I got a one-word reply, one-sentence reply, which was basically go see a guy called Hemi Hill in Hamilton, which I did, and it just sort of snowballed. I went in there for an hour on a Friday, which was my day off from the retail work that I was doing. I had Friday, Saturdays off, and I went in for an hour, and Hemi was lovely, and I thought, okay, they're being polite, and I guess they've probably seen this before. But for me, the hour became, I kept coming back. I don't think they expected that. The hour became 2 hours on a Friday. Then the 2 hours became 4 hours. Then the four became eight. Then I started producing this Saturday morning sports show. Then I started going out and do reporting on the local club rugby. And when the playoffs came around, we started doing commentaries of the playoffs. And so it just sort of snowballed from there. And so I was working 5 days a week at a retail place. I was working 2 days a week at the radio station. And then eventually an opportunity came for me to be part of the radio team, albeit not in the sporting department, but it was the foot in the door.
Yeah, you must have been craving for those 2 days to come around every week, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that really kept me going. And, you know, my wife noticed a real difference on those 2 days compared to the other 2 days, the other 5 days. So yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, if you're ever thinking, should I do something? Yeah, you should give it a crack. What's the worst that could happen? They turn around and say no.
Well, exactly.
Not yeah.
You and I are testament to that, I would say, and also
precisely.
It does get to that point when you can say, well, okay, there are days that feel a little bit more like work than others, but actually, if you've got the opportunity to go and talk about sport you love or be an incredible stadia across the world, it doesn't necessarily feel like a job, more of a privilege. Obviously, you'd had your dummy match, as you call it. You were working these ever-increasing hours. Did you have a vision that you wanted to be calling All Black matches? Was the vision as distilled as that at that point?
I just wanted to commentate sport. That's all I really wanted to do. And the first job I got in radio was actually as a promotions coordinator. And so I was doing that, but they didn't have a sports journalist in Hamilton at the time. And so every once in a while, they'd be like, hey, can you do a bit of this, bit of that? I'd start going along to some of the local press conferences for the rugby teams, netball teams, cricket teams, that sort of thing. So it was sort of a bit of a means to an end. But no, all I wanted to do was commentate sport. I didn't care what sport it was. It didn't have to be rugby. Didn't have to be cricket. Just give me a sport. And, you know, I spent weekends commentating at the local kart club. And absolutely loved it. I just wanted them to give me a sport and just let me loose. That's all I really wanted.
Yeah, and then 2006, your first big event, Commonwealth Games in Melbourne, an event you've continued to commentate on since. I mean, from the events you'd have been doing there, obviously you'd had a fair amount of experience doing the local and regional stuff that you'd been doing, but how much of a deeper end was that to be thrown into?
It was, but it kind of helped because I got a late call-up. Glenn Lama, who was, again, quality broadcaster down these parts of the world, does work on the Olympic Channel and those types of broadcasts. Glenn left the radio station to go to television, and this was about a month before the Com Games in Melbourne, and I got a phone call from Bill Francis saying, hey, we would like you to go and do primarily the basketball and the netball, which was what Dallo was down to do. And I said, yeah, but of course, as calm as possible. Said yes. Said yes, thank you very much. Got off the phone, burst into tears, screamed the house down, called my wife.
Amazing.
And a month later, I'm sitting in Melbourne, you know, again with people who I have listened to and admired for such a long time. Graham Moody. God rest his beautiful soul. As I went over there, we got a commentator in Hamilton called Kevin Hart who had really sort of spent a lot of time working with me. I was his sideline at the rugby for a long period of time. And he goes to me, goes, right, stay next to Moody, stay next to Brian Ashby, watch out for, and I won't mention their name, but watch out for a couple of other people. And that's what I did. And I went over there and, it was just amazing just to be sitting beside, Graham and Brian and Malcolm and Andrew and Darcy and all these people I'd listened to and, you know, watching them work and watch them go about their craft. And it was great. It was great. As I said, we were primarily meant to be doing, I was there for the basketball and the netball. But it was a terrible Commonwealth Games. It started off awful for New Zealand. Like they won so many. We dubbed them the leather medal, okay, which is what you get for finishing fourth. They were winning so many leather medals, and our first medal came in a rather shooting, and this guy called Graham Ead from Leeston, pretty sure that's the birthplace of Daniel Carter. He was in the final of trap shooting, target shooting, clay target shooting. And they were like, well, what are we going to do? Is there a chance for a medal here? And I said, I'll do it. And so I jumped behind the mic and did what we believe is the first ever radio call of shooting. And Graham won gold, and that sort of kick-started after Graham won gold. Then a few more medals started to flow in that weren't the dreaded leather ones. That was
how much notice did you get before you're on the mic talking about shooting?
We had I think it was about 10 minutes. And
what was your knowledge of shooting?
I was very fortunate because going back to my grandfather and my grandmother. They were members of the Woodville Gun Club. Woodville outside of Palmerston North in the central part of New Zealand, just on the outskirts there. And so I'd spent a couple of afternoons as a young fella down at the gun club. And so I understood the concept of you move from spot to spot to spot around the D. You got your six shooters, and then the sixth one stands in behind, and then you move along, and you take your shots, call, and that sort of thing. So I had the knowledge of it. I knew enough about it. And this guy had an opportunity to win a medal. So you've got to call it. That was that's always been the approach on any Com Games team or Olympic Games team that, that I've been fortunate enough to be involved with, is that if you had the opportunity, you commentate them. It's as simple as that. And that's what we did. And Graham won the gold medal, which was a nice little added bonus from that point of view. But yeah, it's you got just this guy's worked so hard to get to that point. What are we going to do? Not commentate it because
absolutely.
We might be a bit embarrassed.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Well, you've got to do what you can. And
yeah,
looking back on that Commonwealth Games, then do you, in terms of your experience now compared to then, do you look back on it and think, you know, do you have pride in the job that you did, or do you look back at it and think, I got through it and it was more of a learning curve than it was a demonstration of a good commentator's work?
I think it's a combination. I think it was a massive learning curve, but I felt I did pretty well.
Yeah, good for you.
And when I had more experienced commentators saying, because we did a couple of the commentaries were joint broadcasts with the ABC, and they had some outstanding commentators there. I was working alongside Peter Walsh, Gerald Waitley, and you know Peter Walsh had been around for a very, very long time, and he was slick. So it's like an apprenticeship. You're learning. Yeah. You're listening to him. It's like, okay, he's doing this. He's doing that. And so you're incorporating that, and so you're sort of you're molding and learning and developing your own style on the go. But you're getting to work with all these amazing voices and amazing commentators, and so I felt I didn't feel out of place.
Yeah,
and I think that probably would have been the big fear, but I didn't feel out of place, which was quite nice. And you know, I just got to work with a bunch of legends, and it was amazing.
Yeah, incredible. Amazing experience. So moving things on a bit, 2007, the Netball World Championships are in Auckland. Netball's been a big part of things for you. What do you like about the sport?
I like the movement. I think it's there's so much more going on. I think it's like anything when you watch certain sports on TV, obviously the camera frames up and it follows a certain area. When you're there watching it live, you're watching, yes, the ball might be down in this third of the court, but there's movement in the center third. Players trying to get themselves free to take the ball, and then down in the other third underneath the goal, that the goal shoot and the goal keeper subtly niggling and bashing each other with elbows and shucking and driving, trying to get away.
You want to be ahead of knowing when that scoring opportunity is going to come, don't you? So
yeah,
if you see it as much as the player does, then hopefully you're that one step ahead as part of your commentary.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and that's the reason why it's so much nicer being able to call games live at a venue, because you get to see the entire field and you can see things unfolding, and you're able to, you know, tell the story of the game so much better, as opposed to where you maybe have to sit and watch it off a screen. You're only getting what you're being shown by the cameras, but when you're live, you can just see so much more and tell so much more of the story of the game. But by being there and seeing, oh look, the right winger is open. If the left back can slide one across to there, they can attack down. That little things like that, which just add to the narrative of a contest.
Yeah, and are there any other sort of key elements of that game in particular, in terms of its sort of flow and back and forth and that side of it that require something else? Because I often think games like basketball as well, where you've got a countdown clock and ultimately certain things need to happen. There's got to be a pacing and a tone that actually is built over quarters of matches, or you know, these sort of time periods that must come into play.
Yeah, it is. You know, it's something, you know, the thing with what you talk about basketball, I mean, basketball's a really, it's an interesting sport to commentate, because something phenomenal can just happen out of nothing. And so it's like, I don't know whether you feel this, Heathy, but sometimes you can get into a rhythm as a commentator with certain sports, you can get a nice rhythm, a nice flow. If there's a good game of rugby and there's lots of movement, it's nice to be out in long phases. It's good. If you know, you have a team rushing up and dropping the ball and it's, you know, very stop start, it's hard to really get into your work. And basketball is a fascinating one because, you know, all it takes is, you know, you watch, you know, the top players and it's just they just need a half second, they're through a gap and next minute they're in the air twirling around, winding their arm up and throwing the ball down and just going, how can the human body do that? And so it's one of those sports where it's kind of, at times you find yourself really going up, down, and then it might be down and up again and that sort of thing. It would be an odd waveform to have a look at.
And I guess the speed also, that some of those explosive moments can happen, and perhaps, you know, the way that the goals might be scored or the baskets are scored is you're probably almost giving a back commentary on what you just saw rather than necessarily, as you can in a rugby game, being able to see a score building up.
There is elements of reactionary to it. And again, it's one of those things. It's like, I think it's like everything in life. The more you do something, the more familiar you get with it, the more comfortable you get with it. I don't think you start to, you know, pre-commentate. I don't know if that's the word, but whether you're starting to get the expectation of this is what's going to happen. But I think you start to get the cues more of, this could happen, and you are that way, then you're subconsciously ready for it as a commentator should what you suspect may happen actually happen.
Yeah, nicely put. Rugby then, of course, has been a big part, a key part of your work. I mean, Commonwealths, four Olympic Games, netball, hosting breakfast shows. I mean, is rugby the biggest part for you or just a part of the bigger picture?
Oh, rugby morphed into the biggest part of it. 2008, after the Olympic Games in Beijing, I took over as the All Blacks commentator, reporter on tour from Andrew Saville when Andrew moved to television. And then they created the role was rugby editor, very grandiose title.
That business card made
beautiful.
Up.
Beautiful. Yeah, someone in middle management got paid up. Someone in middle management got paid a bucket load of money for coming up with that one. But essentially, just commentator, reporter, following the All Blacks around, and it was awesome. You know, I was lucky enough when you think about what the All Blacks were able to do from, you know, 2010 through to 2019. You know, it really was an extraordinary decade. You know, I know it's been dubbed by a couple of people here a decade of dominance. And, yeah, I know they never won the World Cup last year. But, yeah, I tell you what, those 10 years from 2010 to 2019, extraordinary years for that team wearing black. Extraordinary team, I think, for any team wearing black. I mean, you know, the Sevens team got caught up a little bit, but we've seen recently the dominance of the women's Sevens team. The Black Ferns had a wee hiccup in the middle, but gee, they've come back bigger, badder, stronger than ever as well. So it was a pretty impressive decade of rugby to be around and be involved with.
Yeah, and I was thinking the responsibility of being a commentator on the All Blacks, I mean, it's kind of like being the Queen's personal dresser or Elton John's wig maker. I mean, there's a level of pressure there commentating on rugby, on the All Blacks, to an All Blacks nation where rugby is religion. And I guess I'm sort of wondering if you feel that pressure and perhaps, I mean, obviously you can't put yourself in the shoes of other commentators in other countries, but it's got to be something you're aware of, right?
Yeah, you are. I mean, I think you have to make yourself aware of that. And so you need to understand the history. In New Zealand's history when it comes to rugby commentators is incredibly rich. I mentioned the likes of Bob Irvine and Winston McCarthy. I grew up listening to, you know, as I say, John Howson, John Macbeth, on to Graham Moody, Andrew Saville, and then the people who now I'm lucky enough to call, you know, contemporaries and colleagues, the likes of Daniel McCarty, Brian Ashby, Kevin Hart, Paul Allison, amazing rugby commentators. I'm pretty sure I mentioned Sav. I hope I mentioned Andrew Saville in there as well. He was brilliant.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you I think you need to be aware of it. And
is there ever a moment where you're, I don't know, you're thinking that the All Blacks might not be having a great game, but the perception of the All Blacks always having a great game is such that, you know, you're wondering whether it's your job to critique them? Do you ever feel like you're worried if you've got the license to do that?
No. I remember after a game, after they played a game in Argentina, apparently there was a phone call to my boss from the CEO of New Zealand Rugby at the time.
Right.
Who felt my commentary was overtly negative. He was driving and listening to the commentary, and he called up. And I'm pretty sure when he went back and watched the video, he would realise that my call was incredibly accurate and at times probably even flattering to them. It was an awful game of rugby. They were playing Argentina in Argentina. There was television match official checks every 5 or 6 minutes. It was just a dire game of rugby. They jumped out early. Then it was a scrap for like about 40 minutes, 45 minutes, and then they finished with a late try. But it was a terrible game of rugby. And, you know, it was quite funny when that complaint came through. I was like, cool, I've called it accurately then, because it really wasn't that bad. So that's the good thing is that I like to think that, you know, if you're doing your job properly and you're looking at and calling what you see, then that should flow on to being an accurate representation of what the athletes are doing for the fans listening at home. And that's the big thing for the job, as far as I'm concerned. It's not about my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's about, yeah.
You're not there to be the All Blacks cheerleader. You're there to tell the people exactly what's going on in the game. And that's the job, isn't it?
Yep.
What do you think of your voice now then, now that you've been behind the mic for so many years? How do you think you sound?
I still can't listen back to myself.
Really?
I'll listen back, and if I'm like doing an interview and with one of the shows or doing a preview of something, and they might play a bit of my commentary, I'm like, who's that dick? What the hell's he on? You know, it's still really...
What is it you're hearing that you don't like then?
Oh, I don't like the sound of my voice.
Right.
Stupid, isn't it? You know? But, you know, sometimes I just think, oh, what's happening with my voice there? but, yeah, I mean, the thing is, again, it's not about me. I don't have to like the sound of my voice. The key thing is what I'm saying, and I'm accurately reflecting the physical endeavours of the athletes that I'm commentating, and I'm accurately reflecting that to the fans who are listening, who maybe can't see it or are seeing it and preferring to listen to a radio commentary and want to feel like they are there. That's the job. It's not about me. It's never going to be about me. And the day it becomes about me will be the day I'll be heading for the door and doing something else, because that's not the job of a commentator, in my opinion. Not a play-by-play commentator anyway.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You mentioned something there, and This wasn't on my list of things to talk about, but it's a very sensitive subject, obviously. And, you know, we're recording this at the end of July 2020, and we've had the Black Lives Matter movement over the last few months. And I just wondered, we were talking about the athletes that you're talking about. You've got the Polynesian influence in that part of the world. You've got those that come over from the Pacific Islands, from Tonga and Fiji and Samoa. We've heard a lot of athletes who have talked about the fact that they're often referred to, if they're the black winger on the team or whatever, as here they are, incredibly powerful or devastatingly quick, and they're not looked at in the same way or with as much intelligence, and there's perhaps some subconscious bias being used. And it's certainly given me cause to reflect and wonder if I'm using particular adjectives completely unconsciously, obviously. And I think someone like Clive Tilsley's come out and commented that, you know, he never does it. But I don't know if any of us can really say we never do it, even if we know we don't have a racist bone in our body. You know, I know you're the same man of the world that I would be, but have any of those side of things given you cause to think about any unconscious bias that you may have had in these types of moments or going forward?
No, again, I come back to the point that if you are just commentating what the athletes are doing and you are just accurately recounting their endeavours on the field, that shouldn't happen.
That's fine.
Now, I believe that if you are doing that, I don't think there is anything wrong with, you know, I want to make sure I word this right, Heathy. I think that, yeah, if you are reflecting what they do on the field,
yeah,
that in a way should negate any conscious or subconscious racism that you may have.
Yeah.
And so and it is frustrating because I think one of the biggest examples of this, Ma'a Nonu and Conrad Smith. Now, Ma'a was always, he's big, he's powerful, he can run over you, he can run round you, he can do this and this and that sort of thing. And Conrad, who had a law degree, he's so smart, so cerebral, you know, the way he plays the game. I tell you right now, Ma'a Nonu had one of the best rugby brains going around. He was a very, very shrewd operator with the way he did. But again, I think there wasn't. Scott Stevenson actually wrote a really good article with regards to this. The fact that here it was, this big, strapping, hulking, powerful Pacific Islander alongside this fair-skinned but quite slight, sinewy sort of a player in midfield, and how, you know, it was always, Conrad was the brains and this guy was the power, when, you know, Ma'a had as good a rugby intelligence as Conrad did. So I think there are...
It's a really good example, yeah.
Yeah, I think there are sometimes, maybe this is me being naive, I genuinely think some of it is just, it's not conscious. I think it is very subconscious that when people do it. But again, I come back to the fact that if you are a commentator who is just commentating the athlete and what they are doing, the colour of their skin becomes irrelevant in the commentary sense. The colour of their skin is not irrelevant. I just want to clarify that there, but it becomes irrelevant in the commentary sense as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I hope that makes sense.
No, it does. Very eloquently put, and I think you're absolutely right. There's also, I think a key thing for a lot of us to bear in mind is not to go towards those very simple expressions of players that isn't related to what they're doing on the pitch at that very moment. Yeah. So not to constantly refer to Manu Tuilagi, who may be an English version of that Ma'a Nonu character, who's a very smart rugby player but can knock doors down, and there he is, England's power machine, and always go to those sorts of words when ultimately, if there is a connotation that there is an unconscious bias in these words, actually you don't need to bring these sorts of expressions in. You can talk about other details about what he's actually just done that are more relevant to him as an individual.
Yeah, but again, as I say, if you are calling his action, a guy like Manu Tuilagi is a powerful player. But again, if you are calling and watching the game, and if he does something where it is obviously, man, that's a good play. They needed to kick that little ball through, get it in behind, trap the fullback in the corner. That's a smart play. Now, if you are just reacting and reading that, again, just based on what the player's done, it will come out in the commentary anyway. So I just come back. I'm a Heathy, you've known me for a while. I'm a very, very simple human being. If you call what you see and you call what you see accurately and reflect the endeavours of the athletes for the fans, I'd like to think that maybe some of the stuff you're alluding to maybe just dissipates over time.
Yeah, I would think you're right. Very, very well spoken. Do you prep? How does the prep go in terms of your voice? Has your voice ever let you down?
No, it came close to at the 2015 Rugby World Cup final.
Not a small occasion then.
Not a small occasion. I get chest infections, and when I get chest infections, I lose my voice, and I lose it for like 3-4 days, and I could feel it starting to go. I'm thinking to myself, oh man, this isn't good. And Elliot Smith, who was on tour with me, I said, mate, you need to just prepare yourself for the fact that if my voice goes, you're calling the World Cup final. I know it's an awful way for me to drop it on you, but the simple fact is if it goes, you're behind the mic. You need to just be thinking about that and get ready for it. And he was like, okay. But thankfully, it lasted. I got some.
I love the way you've downplayed his reaction to that there, by the way. Oh yeah, okay.
Elliot's pretty cool. I mean, he would have done a great job. I mean, Elliot has developed into an outstanding commentator, and he would have done a great job, and he would have captured the moment too. But I got through it. I went to Peter Montgomery, the great yachting commentator, he told me of a similar thing he had when he was calling the America's Cup, and he used to gargle brandy.
Any excuse.
So he'd gargle brandy. It's a great story with PJ. It's kind of like, you know, just you get good quality brandy and gargle it, Nigel, gargle it. I said, well, what do you do? Do you spit it out or do you swallow it? Well, either way, but I find the latter far more enjoyable, Nigel. So, and that got me through. So, and the voice, funnily enough, the voice never went. It actually seemed to get, as the game started, it was like, oh, it's a bit croaky, I'm okay. And then it just seemed to get through quite nicely and got to the end of the game and been fine ever since.
Yeah. And then you were smashed. I can't remember the final result, but other than that, had a lovely time.
Can we just clarify? I was gargling the brandy the night before, not the actual commentary, big fella.
I swear that's a seventh swig of cognac he's had in the last 10 minutes. What do you think makes a good commentary across any of the sports that you've worked on? And there will be a supplementary question, which is what do you think makes a good commentator? But what do you think puts it all together nicely?
I just think what makes a good commentary, as I say, I think it's just accurate reflection of the endeavours of the athletes that you are calling. I think people just appreciate that obviously I've worked the majority of my career in radio. I've had a little dabble in TV for about 5 years ago, but most of my one has been in radio. So I guess that's what I associate with. It's just calling accurately, being honest, and making sure that what you are commentating, again, to be repetitive, accurately reflects what the athletes are doing, and making sure that those fans who are not there feel like they're there. That's the ultimate compliment, I think, for a radio commentator in particular. If someone comes up to you and says, mate, you made me feel like I was there, that's the best one. It's the second best one. The best one, it's the nicest one I ever got, was a blind lady who came up to me and said, thank you for helping me see sport again.
Wow.
I don't think that is, there can be no higher compliment, I think, for someone in the radio sphere. And that was humbling as all heck, I can tell you that.
Yeah, I can imagine.
What, what makes a good commentary is just, you know, making sure that you're doing your basics from a radio point of view. For rugby example, it's making sure you're positioning where the ball is, who's got the ball, who's made the tackle, doing the reposition. You know, the late Graham Moody was time. His mantra, time, score, field position, and field position. Those were the five key things for him. And he's absolutely bang on. And if you do your basics well, give a little bit of yourself to the call as well, I think that's what makes a really good commentator. But as I said before, ultimately, it's not about you. Should never be about you. Always about the athletes. Always about the fans. And that's what I think makes a really good commentator, is someone who can check their ego at the door when they walk into the commentary box and make the athletes and the listeners or the viewers their sole focus for the next 2.5-3 hours.
Mm. And there's a nature to people in New Zealand, mainly men, whether it's the Pacific Island, the Maori influence, whether it's the Scots that came out and resettled around Dunedin. I don't know what it was, but there's a sort of stoic sense to a lot of guys out in New Zealand and almost a sense of not talking too much and not communicating too much. And I'm intrigued. Obviously, you can't be a man of few words and on the radio when you've got, you know, words and pictures to tell. And I'm not saying that even those qualities encompass a whole nation. That would be foolish. But I can imagine that there's a nature to having to find that balance to know how people like to talk and listen and be in New Zealand versus, I don't know, I'm trying to think of another extreme. Maybe the Irish who love to talk, love to get across every detail. Do you think there is a slight cultural difference of delivery in that way?
Oh, I'm sure commentaries all over the world, there are definitely different ways that people do it, and people are looking for certain things because, again, as you say, it's cultural. For me, as I said, I just always grew up listening to these people just describing, you know, the images that they see, and this player's got it up to the 22, ball has been placed down, now it goes to the right-hand side, next player carries on, 10 metres in from so-and-so. And so I guess you get influenced by who you listen to over a course of time.
Would you say, therefore, that then all of these commentators, all of these good commentators should be covering these basics in the same way? Do you think stylistically or culturally, if you're listening to me or anyone else or Nick Mullins or Miles Harrison or anyone calling a rugby game in the Northern Hemisphere, has a different tone or focuses on different elements as to what you might hear in a Southern Hemisphere or New Zealand commentary?
I think what I've heard, and it's kind of odd, I mean, I guess the times when I do listen, I think that the interesting thing, I think the pace is... it's so measured. I think you guys got a really good handle on the pace of a game.
Mm.
I know at times myself, sometimes I can get a bit, I feel it myself, again, being hypercritical, which is what the beast that we are. Sometimes I'm worried that I'm a bit frenetic.
Okay.
Whereas you listen to someone like Robbo, he just always seems to be in control. He's just got the yeah. tempo, the momentum. He's just got the most gorgeous feel for a game.
Mm.
I reckon if he'd wanted to, he would have been a superb referee because he's just got the feel of a game so down pat. And it's interesting, yeah, you said that, but then I listened to American Football Online and, you know, some of the way they call, again, because that's real stop-start is because of the nature of the game.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard NFL on the radio. I might have heard it on the BBC, actually, when they've done the Super Bowl, when I've been listening to it at night, going to bed or something. But, okay.
Yeah, but that's like waves crashing. That's kind of like, boom, and then calm, and then comes another one, and then calm, and then there's a big play. So, yeah, there is. I think there's just... there are certain things that, you know, is done in the United Kingdom and Europe, and they will be different to what you see in, you know, Japan, when you listen to Japanese commentators, when you listen to, I love listening to, even though I can't, I'm trying to learn Spanish, I love listening to the Spanish announcers for the wrestling. They are brilliant. when you get to go to Argentina, of course, that's what you got. It's like the Spanish, these guys, you're sitting there and I'm learning a little bit of the language. Like, wow, these guys are really, really good. And then someone gets pile driven through their table as per normal on those sort of things. But yeah, they're really good things. And you just,
they're really, really good until someone spills blood all over their notes.
So as I say, you watch, you learn if you like commentary and you want to get better when you're watching sport, and I watch a lot of sport, you are listening to the commentators and you are listening and go, could that work in what I do with what they are doing? And so you take bits and bobs from motorsport, which I watch a truckload of, sports entertainment, you know, with the wrestling, with, you know, mixed martial arts and boxing. You can find all these, you know, little bits and bobs just by watching sport and just being aware of the craft of what that particular commentator is trying to do.
Mm. You've, as far as I'm aware, been a radio commentator most of your career. Has TV knocked on the door many times? Have you been tempted to it at any stage?
I did a little bit, I think 2015, 2016. And look, it's one thing, yeah, I'm not going to lie, I'd love to give it another crack.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it at the time, and I enjoyed it primarily because of the people, and that's part of the reason I love commentary. It's, you know, the other part of it is the people that you get to meet, like your good self, and, you know, you head up there and you bump into Miles Harrison and Sonia McLaughlin, and you just, you know, you're just, well, Michael Corcoran, and just, you're welcomed back, like, you know, you hadn't been away. You only go up there sort of, yeah, maybe once every year or every second year you might get to see them. And it's the people. And the people on the television crews, they're just such good human beings. And, you know, that's the thing you really enjoy as well. That's the other side of the commentary, is the camaraderie and the people you meet and the friendships you make. And, you know, there's so many really good people involved in sports broadcasting. And you know, that's the thing I really enjoyed about my short stint with TV, is the crew was such good human beings. It's the thing I miss now with Radio Sport having closed here in New Zealand. I do miss the job, but I miss my mates. I miss the people I used to work with who are just absolutely awesome human beings.
Yeah, and well, my next two questions were, what do you enjoy about it? And the broadcasting landscape is an ever-changing one, and you started to cover them both. I mean, tell me about the last few months in terms of the end of Radio Sport and how, at your point in your career, that's kind of made you feel.
Well, it hurt. Mm. You don't want to lose the You don't want to lose a job that you really enjoy and that you've been doing for 20-odd years, and you feel for your mates, the people that you work with. We had an awesome crew at Radio Sport, just brilliant, brilliant people.
Mm-hmm.
The news department, which was initially set up by Ricky Jane Swinnell, who for my mind is one of the most talented all-round broadcasters on the planet. She can commentate, she can interview, she can host, she can report, she can write, she can do radio shows, she can do, you know, anything that she turns her hand to. She's amazing. And she set up the news team and the way that really sort of evolved. Such amazing young people. I mean, you're talking to someone who's in his late 40s here, but these amazingly talented young journalists coming through and what they've gone on to do in radio and in some cases on TV. And, you know, you felt there's a lot of really good people at the moment around. To a degree, you know, there's so many talented people in our industry at the moment in New Zealand, because we got hit really, really hard. Radio Sport obviously went off air. Sky Sport News, they've scaled back, although it's nice to see they've come back online. The sports department at the New Zealand Herald, they had some, you know, redundancies in there as well.
And these are just economic forces, these kind of things that are forcing these closures?
Yeah, the COVID was the thing that sort of did that. So, I mean, it's good. With more sport coming back on in New Zealand, we're very fortunate at the moment. Obviously, got Super Rugby Aotearoa, the ANZ Premiership, which is the local netball competition, which will get opened up to allowing Moving back around the country at the moment. They've been sort of just working out of a couple of venues in Auckland, or a venue in Auckland. So there's a lot more sport going on now. And as that happens, you know, it's phone calls for people saying, hey, can you do a bit of contract work and that sort of a thing. But you're right, the landscape, look, the world has been changed, irreversibly changed by COVID, and you can't deny that. And the sports industry is just a wee microcosm of that change.
Mm. I mean, do you, obviously, having had 20 years working with Radio Sport, do you worry for the future as a guy? I mean, you mentioned it there, in your late 40s, you've obviously got all this fantastic experience, but being out there searching for the next contract for the next 2 weeks, the next 4 weeks, whatever, is probably a slightly new experience for you.
Yeah, it is. It's a new year. It's scary as hell.
Mm.
It's really scary because I've been very fortunate. Finished my study. I got a part-time job, which morphed into a full-time job with the warehouse. I did that for 10 years. I then left the warehouse and I did radio for 20 years. So I've never, you know, had to look for work. And as I say, I'm not ready to stop commentating. I don't want to stop commentating. But I'm a husband. I'm a father. The simple fact is there will come a point where if I can't get the work, I will have to look at something else, maybe not in the sports broadcasting or sports journalism sphere, because as a husband and a father, that's what you've got to do.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed, something rolls along. And as I say, doing a little bit of contract work here and there, that sort of thing. But yeah, man, it's real scary. It's not a fun feeling. And the last 3 months have been tough, been really, really tough, you know. And in the midst of all this as well, my mother succumbed to an illness, and so she passed away in the middle of it too. So, mate, as far as I'm concerned, you know, COVID can just walk into the ocean and just not stop until the bubbles do. As far as I'm concerned, you know, it's affected so many people's lives.
Mm.
You know, and it's probably going to continue to do so for I'd say probably years to come. I don't think this is something that's just going to stop once they figure out a vaccine.
Yeah, makes me think of the meme which showed a space traveler coming back to Earth and going, what year is this? And the person on Earth says 2020, and the spaceman says, the first year of lockdown.
Yeah.
And that was a worrying thing. My condolences over the passing of your mother, and look, I hope you and the family are doing okay.
Yep.
To take your mind to a more positive place, then it would be remiss of me not to ask about some of your favourite moments, maybe sporting moments on the field or in the commentary box that you're happy to share with us.
Oh, gee. I'm going to go cliche and say all of them.
Ah.
Because I've enjoyed all of them in their own way, and I know it's the way we do this. Is that, you know, there should be one thing that really stands out. And I've been really lucky, and I know I've been very fortunate to be in the chair when certain things have happened. And you know,
I'll let you into a secret. I don't have one.
Yeah,
you know,
all of them have their own. It's the great thing about sport. It's it's a great thing about life. Every moment is unique. You may think that they are the same, but there are still those little elements.
Mm.
And so, I've been lucky enough to do Olympic Games, and you know, Usain Bolt doing his thing, and Isn Baeva, and you know, Rudisha's that 800 meters in London is still extraordinary. And you know, been lucky enough to be at all these amazing venues. You know, Twickenham in 2012 when England beat the All Blacks. That's just the most noise I can remember out of a crowd. Ireland beating the All Blacks in Chicago, that was extraordinary to be part of, to be able to call gold medals or unlikely medals that we weren't expecting for New Zealand at Com Games and Olympics. They're cool. But I enjoy as much being at the Tamranui Domain commentating King Country versus West Coast when I first started out.
Yeah.
I enjoyed being a commentator at the Hamilton Kart Club and seeing, you know, some of the amazing young talent coming through New Zealand motorsport. Each piece of commentary is special and unique and enjoyable. Even the bad ones, when you come off going, oh gee, I don't think that was my best work. You still, it's kind of like, well, it's, you know, it's still pretty cool to be able to do this.
Yeah, there's also a real joy when you have those terrible games, but you're also able to come away from it feeling like you've had a decent call of a poor match, and I love that challenge.
Yeah. People coming up to you the next day going, was it as bad as it sounded? I said, yeah, it was. Trust me, we were there. I remember apologising. There was a game, might have been the All Blacks in England at Eden Park, and oh, it was terrible. And I remember but it was close. It's one of those, you'd notice this as well. The game can be absolutely awful, turgid, and yet there's like 2 points in it, and there's like this real flurry in the last 5 minutes, and people are walking out going, man, what a game. And then the next day they realise, well, actually there was 78 minutes of that game that was absolutely rubbish, and the last 2 minutes were really good. And that's... So
I'm also capable of seeing those games where you can see it's a terrible game, but actually from, you know, minute 40, minute 35, you spotted a couple of things that you want to keep an eye on to try and keep the game interesting. And it, you know, if it's a close game, but even though it's terrible, you could be leaving the ground and someone turns around and says, oh, that game was awful. Yeah. But actually you could be saying, oh, I thought it was all right.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I remember apologising in that game with 10 minutes to go or something like 70 minutes, 10 minutes to play. It's 12 all. If you've managed to stick around with us this far, thank you very much. You're guttier than what I am. Let's see how this one finishes out. You know, just having fun and that sort of thing. And I got a couple of mates texting me with the emojis and that sort of thing. But, you know, you got to – that's the other thing too, mate. And you know this. You got to have fun with it because, gee, it's a great way to make a living.
It is. And you mentioned this a short while ago, sport is entertainment. And I've mentioned this on a couple of pods, and it came up a lot out of all of the stupid parody clips I was doing during lockdown.
Which were brilliant. They were stupid. They were brilliant.
Well, bless you. But actually, the fact that, and I mentioned this a lot on a previous episode, but a lot of women who've got guys who are watching the sport with a beer in their hand in the lounge, and the wives are nowhere to be seen out with the girls, but getting messages from women, particularly them going, well, if this is what sport could be like, then I'm in. Yes, it was two dogs chasing each other around the park and a snail crossing a pavement, but it really made me think that when I go back to doing the sport again, how important it is to bring all of that together in making sure it's entertainment and not to cheapen the product. It makes me think of how often we can get a little bit too serious and you know, into the stats and the consequences when ultimately it's a bag of air being kicked around a field and we just want to see who wins and we should be enjoying it.
Precisely. And that's what I meant when I said you make sure you give something of yourself. I'm not a funny human being, but I can be a bit of a goof, and there's nothing wrong with that, adding that to a commentary. You know, nothing wrong with the odd dad joke now and again. But yeah, just, you know, being yourself, and that's the thing. That's what I mean. You've got to give something of yourself in order to get something back. So, you know, I think definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So the moment will arise in your very successful next 10, 20 years, however long you want it to be in your contract life. But towards the end of that time, you will be given the chance in my fantasy Q commentator world to sign off exactly how you would like. Now, this could be from the realms of fantasy in terms of who the teams are, whether it's an event, whether it's one game. Nigel Yalden, how would you like to go out? What would it look like? What would it be?
Oh, truth.
Yeah, have that.
Yeah, trust me, I'm having it, son. I'm having it, all right.
Yeah.
Jeez, what a sod of a question, Heathie. There's a beast.
Well, there you go. It's the final question on every one. I mean, the Olympics is probably the answer that comes up the most as it sort of taps into the sense of occasion, the family that's created, but you've had experience of Commonwealths and Olympics and Rugby World Cups, so I'm stalling as best I can for you.
Yeah, you got a store for me. This is a great question. Again, Nick, it's not about me. It's not about me. So just wherever I am and whatever's in front of me, I'll call it and I'll say goodbye at the end of it. Just go out as I came in. Go out as I came in. You know,
that's a very nice way of putting it. Yeah. No, I'll allow
that. That is a sod of a question. You rotten little human being. You're going to cop it for that.
And you've got splinters in your ass for how much of the fence you've sat on.
Oh, dear. I dare right up the jacks. That's a shocker.
Nigel, you've been a joy to have on as a guest. And for listeners who might not be aware, one of the last times I saw you, which was probably Rome, Italy against New Zealand, before that,
you bought me my rainbow laces that I've been trying to hunt down for years.
Well, this is what I was going to mention, and you said to me that you wanted a pair of those so that you could be representative and support, and that meant an awful lot to me.
Still wear them every sporting game that I go to.
Good.
Those laces go into whatever shoes that I am wearing.
I better get you some new ones soon, then.
Well, maybe a second pair might be a good option. Every single one. I said at the time when you gave them to me, I will be wearing them to every sporting event from now on, and I have been true to that. And you gave those to me how many years ago?
Was it 2018? I think, yeah, November. Yeah, very good. You've talked about how a key in commentary is about being yourself. And in all my experience, and no doubt those who've listened to you over the years, you certainly are that. You are the genuine article. You're a caring man. You're the real deal. And I hope that as the rest of the next few weeks and years go ahead, that, plenty of people in that part of the world and across the rest of the world continue to employ you and see that, because you deserve it. It's been an absolute treat to have you on. Nozzy Alden, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks a lot, Heathy. Appreciate it, my man.
What an absolute gent. And what a challenging time Nigel's had, clearly, over the past few months. I take my hat off to him, no doubt facing some uncertainty as well in the future, as I'm sure many of us can relate to. I love Nigel's simplicity in how he looks at his role in terms of accurately describing what an athlete is doing at that moment. Sounds easy when he says it like that, doesn't it? But perhaps that is a nice note to end Series 3 on. From over-preparing, which we've heard about this series, to not relaxing into the moment or being your authentic self behind the microphone. The art of commentary is clearly about feeling calm, confident, and ready to tell your audience what you can see and the context and story of it too. I hope to be back before too long, but in the meantime, thank you so, so much for listening and supporting the podcast. It makes me not a bean in revenue. If you felt inclined to contribute having listened to episodes, then do feel free to donate via my PayPal. It's the first time I've mentioned it, but feel free. It is paypal.me/rugbymedia. Until next time, though, do take care of yourself, and it's goodbye for now. The Q Commentator podcast series has been a Rugby Media production.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.